All your favorite CBC podcasts are now available on YouTube. The best in award-winning true crime investigations, hilarious comedies, vibrant pop culture conversations, and even more audio series are all available on CBC Podcast's YouTube channel. You'll also find exclusive video first episodes, YouTube shorts, and behind-the-scenes content from our hosts and producers that you can't find anywhere else. So if YouTube is your go-to source for podcasts, just search CBC Podcasts and hit subscribe, and you'll never miss the latest update.
This is a CBC podcast.
So, The Chosen, the TV show that is based on the life of Jesus, is one of the most popular shows around right now. Martin Scorsese is making a movie about the life of Jesus as well. It's going to be his second one. Today on the podcast, the group chat is here, and we'll get into the rise of pop culture based on the Bible. I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. Look, I think the best place to start this conversation is here.
It would appear that we now want the same thing as Pilate.
Senior leaders in every district should question and expose Jesus.
So that is a bit of the trailer for season 4 of the TV show The Chosen. It's not going to be a mystery to you about what you just heard, but The Chosen follows the life of Jesus. And what's unique about The Chosen is that even though it's like an episodic TV show, it has been releasing its episodes in movie theaters, and they've cracked the top 10 in the box office every single time that a pair of episodes have come out. Meanwhile, you have a movie like Cabrini also raking it in. That is a movie about the life of a Catholic missionary. That's what we have right now. What's coming is more. Martin Scorsese is working on a movie about Jesus. Mel Gibson is working on a sequel to Passion of the Christ. Amazon MGM Studios recently gave a whole bunch of money, I think $75 million, to partner with a new faith-based production company. I'm interested. I'm interested in what's happening here. I'm interested in this moment of Christianity and pop culture. And I wanted to dig into all of it. And so the group chat is here. Rad Simon Pillay is here. Ann T. Donahue is here. And Brent Strawn is here. And Rad, Brent, happy Easter if you're celebrating. Welcome to the show. How's it going, everybody? How you feeling?
Happy Easter.
Hello. Oh,
good to be here.
Hello to everyone.
I want to get into the way that the art that we consume a lot of the time maybe retells big, significant stories from the Bible. Even if you're not familiar with the scripture, you know, like references to it come up all the time in pop culture. There are so many examples. Rad, maybe you want to talk about a moment from a movie you've seen where it was like, oh, this is so clearly a reference to the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, like, top of mind for me is RoboCop.
Oh, you know, always. Of course, we're always thinking about RoboCop.
Always RoboCop.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that biblical story of RoboCop. Yes.
Which it is, right?
Go on, go on.
I mean, it is RoboCop is a Christ-like figure, just like say Neo and Superman. And there is that shot of him. I mean, at the end of the movie where he's kind of walking on water, he's actually just crossing a swamp towards the villain.
I love that scene. Okay, what I want to do right now is actually just play a little bit of that scene. Let's hear it.
Okay. I give up.
I'm not arresting you anymore.
Hey. Oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
And it looks like Verhoeven shoots it to make it look like he's walking on water to drive home this idea that RoboCop is resurrected from the dead and he is the savior of Detroit.
I gotta tell you guys this. When I was growing up in Kingston, Ontario, I had a high school teacher, Miss Dempster. And the way that she taught writer's craft, Brent, was a significant part of the course was talking about how so many of the stories we consume are references to the Bible. Maybe sometimes they are overt references to the Bible, but sometimes they're quite hidden references to the Bible. Brent, you're an ordained minister and also a professor. Part of your job is teaching the Bible. Can you think of some examples of how the Bible shows up in art that maybe might surprise some people?
Yeah, I mean, blockbusters are obvious. You know, you got the Ten Commandments is on every Easter. You know,
yeah.
You got
yes.
Noah by Darren Aronofsky. You
yeah.
got Exodus, God and Kings by Ridley Scott, all this stuff. And that's sort of obvious. But what I like thinking about are these themes that are biblical. Brad already raised this sort of Christ figure thing and mentioned Neo. I mean, Gandalf in Lord of the Rings is another one. Come on.
Yeah.
And E.T., the extraterrestrial, obviously. And then comes back to life. He's got the white robe on, the kind of the Sacred Heart of Christ, red beating, and Eliot's like, you know, praising God or somebody.
I've because never thought of that when it comes to E.T., actually. That's never
I missed that
to
one,
me.
Too.
I yeah, no, never right. heard. You were like, E.T., obviously. I'm like, no, Brent, you're blowing my mind yeah, here.
Anyway, it's yes. 1982, you know. Yeah, but these themes are sort of everywhere. And also, I'd say music has lots of this in it, particularly rap, hip-hop, and country music. Kendrick Lamar, you know, Pulitzer Prize-winning album, damn. It's got all kinds of allusions to Deuteronomy, for heaven's sake.
And Deuteronomy say that we all been cursed. I know he walks the earth, but it's money to get.
Job, Amos, it's remarkable. So it's really all over the place once you have eyes to see it.
But for you, are you like, do you get excited when it's like little references that go like, oh, this like is clearly alluding to the Bible? Or is there, are you looking for like a more direct kind of reference when you sort of observe the relationship between pop culture and the Bible?
So I do like this idea of themes or resonances. Mm. And so like, for example, there's this great book in the Old Testament, Hebrew Bible called Ecclesiastes. And I think what bugs this guy is really death, the problem of death and finitude. You know, it's interesting. You start watching TV, movies, read literature. There's so much in that material that is the opposite, that actually shows that the problems with life, the problems that human beings create, are precisely because they resist accepting their limitations, resist their mortality, deny their death. This is a psychological thing, but I mean, let's just talk Harry Potter, right? Voldemort doesn't want to die, and all the evil that he creates is because of that. So anyway, it's all over the place. People resisting their limitations and finitude, and it producing all kinds of bad things. Yeah. Well, to me, that just resonates with Ecclesiastes and the need to accept mortality and, you know, love the small pleasures and glorious ordinary things that we encounter. In our lives.
And the idea of accepting death and then working through that in your work, which is also working through that in your art, I think that's something I want to come back to a little bit later in this conversation, particularly when we talk about Martin Scorsese, Rad, because I think that is coming up a lot in the themes that he's working through right now. And let's just talk about, you know, whether we're talking about the little references to the Bible here and there or the full-on basically just reinterpretations of stories from the Bible. I'm thinking of, you know, shows like The Chosen, but also like, you know, The Book of Clarence, which is like a movie that came out, I think, late last year. There is a lot of investment in drawing stories and mining stories from the Bible. Why do you think that is, Anne?
It is literally a tale as old as time. Like, it's like the duality, good versus evil. There's so much gray area in the Bible, but there's also like right and wrong, like good and bad. And that's an easy story to tell because you can apply it, as we can see, anywhere in Hollywood. Like Star Wars is also a really good example of when you see like Darth Vader, like again, death comes for us all. And at the end, like spoiler alert to 1983, but then Darth Vader passes away.
A lot of spoiling going on around here, but that's all
you know,
right.
Yeah. Happy Easter. Get with it.
The hero makes a great comeback. Yes.
Deal with it. Yeah. But I think it's a palpable story as well when you think of it as like Star Wars is a children's movie. Yes. Sorry, everybody. Like it's an easy way to begin lessons of morality grounded in something that has transcended generations upon generations upon generations and is still not really fully understood as, sure. I mean, we can all attest.
Rad, Bible stories can get into really rich territory. And I think that's, you know, part of the draw, as Anne just said, you know, there's morality, there's faith, there's all these human relationships. I mentioned Scorsese a minute ago. You know, he's making a new movie about Jesus, but also I'm interested in like this moment in Scorsese, the stuff that he's trying to reckon with. He made The Irishman, you know, he made Silence. A lot of these are about these larger themes of morality, larger themes of forgiveness, larger themes of faith. The idea that he's making the next movie that he wants to make is a short movie, we should say. He said it's going to be about like an 80 or 90 minute movie, which is a departure from all these 4-hour movies that he was making. What do you make of that as like the next conversation that Scorsese wants to have in this moment in his career?
I mean, on the one hand, I was a bit baffled by the decision because I was like, dude, you did it. You know, Silence was your masterpiece. This is actually an adaptation from of an Endo novel, which is actually the same author he's adapting this new Jesus movie from. And it's about Jesuit priests in 17th century Japan trying to rescue one of their own, you know, grappling with the kind of colonial force they bring to Japan.
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
And basically, I mean, Andrew Garfield is playing this Jesuit priest who's trying to find grace in the heavens, who's trying to see some sign of God while all of these people are being tortured for their faith. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, it's a movie about like trying to grapple with where is heaven on earth and how do you see the grace in humanity when, you know, when you're met with silence out there. So like that's themes that Scorsese has been dealing with throughout his entire career. And when I say in his entire career, like, dude, like this is, he wanted to be a priest, you know, like he has this Catholic upbringing, right?
That's right.
Like, I mean, and thank God bless whoever got into a fight with him in that yard and got him kicked out of seminary school. Cause that's why we have the career that we have. But if you look at all of his movies, like you go all the way back to Mean Streets, right? It's like all of his movies are about men trying to reconcile their sins with their religious beliefs and how they kind of reconcile those ways of life. Mm-hmm. This new movie, as I understand, is a modern look back at Jesus, trying to, I think, separate Jesus from the church and all the colonial aspects and the colonial violence committed by the church and just kind of get to the core of his teachings, which is what Scorsese has always been doing.
But, you know, and what surprised me about this is that, like, he's already sort of asked some of these questions. And so the idea that he wants to make it in an 80-minute movie, do you hear that and go, Scorsese, you're finally making a movie under 2 hours. You know what? I will show up. Does it make you at least a little bit interested, do you think?
I mean, personally, with the most ADHD person alive over here, yes. I'm like, oh, good. hooray. So there's that aspect. But yeah. I mean, your perspective on everything changes the older you get, whether it be religion, whether it be family, whether it be mortality. Like he's at the point of his career where he gets to look back and see a tapestry that he's created. Mm-hmm. And I think that how that must shift your creative vision. Yeah. And I mean, it already has. If he's like 80 minutes, like, thank you so much. That is, he did that for me. That was for me. I prayed for that and I got it. And again, I cannot say happy Easter enough to them. Yes. Thank you.
Are you sure he really meant it though? Was he just saying, I'm 80 years old, guys, and they heard 80 minute runtime? Like, is that what happened?
He said it'd be like an 80 to 90 minute. The script is already written and I'm holding him to it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Cruikshank.
Jessie Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl, let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout. Because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
My name is Alamin Abdul Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. My guests today are Rad Simon Pillay, Ann T. Donahue, and Reverend Brent Strawn. We're talking about the Bible's place in entertainment and pop culture right now. Rad, the other big thing that I wanted to talk about is this recent growth in faith-based production companies. We've seen a significant growth in those companies. They're making quite a bit of content, and it's actually quite successful. When we talk about faith-based movies, what do we mean exactly?
Yeah, well, I mean, faith-based is really this label we're giving these movies that came in the wake of Passion of the Christ, right? Yeah. Like when they saw the box office potential of Passion of the Christ, all of a sudden you had these shingles pop up like Empower Pictures and Affirm Pictures that were starting to cater to that audience. And
it's like Seventh Heaven Eraser, but it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, at the box office. Right?
All right.
But the thing is, but faith-based, it is such a wide-ranging label, right? Because you could have these kind of biblical retellings, like, you know, like telling the story of Christ, or you could have these movies about like modern miracles where some child dies temporarily, goes to heaven, sees heaven, comes back and bears witness. That is actually the plot of one of those
movies. I
was going
to say, you didn't make that up. That's a literal plot. I've seen that trailer. I know
heaven
that
is for real, I think it's called,
that's
right?
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly what it's called. You nailed it.
Yeah. So you have those ones. And then you also have, though, like just a slapstick comedy like Mom's Night Out. Like it's like Bad Moms, but from Affirm Pictures, right? You know, the characters are church-going Christians, and they don't do anything that will offend essentially Bible Belt audiences, where they can feel safe from what liberal Hollywood, quote-unquote liberal Hollywood, you know, typically gives them.
So the other thing is, like, Amazon has partnered with this Wonder Project to develop faith-based programming. You know, Kirk Cameron has CamFam Studios. We saw the success of the movie The Sound of Freedom last year. How has the demand for certain types of values-based programming evolved over the years, do you think, Rad?
Well, so again, and here's the thing, right? So we typically, when you see like kind of Hollywood people talk about faith-based, we're thinking mainly of like Affirm Pictures and the movies they're producing for sure. Faith-based audience. You're thinking of these kind of, there is that sort of definition. But then, you know, if you think about how, you know, like now you have Chosen, which is, like you said, it's a TV show that's
a wildly successful television show.
In theaters. Successful in theaters.
I mean, they will pair two or three episodes at a time and show them in theaters, and it's raking in millions and millions of dollars. Yes.
Yeah. But what about like those movies that we don't call faith-based, but they are targeting the same audience? If you think about like Hallmark content, right? Sure. Which for the most part catered to those same audiences, you know, kept it not really diverse, kept it, you know, very like Christian until they got called out for that. And also you have like entities like BYU TV, which is the Mormon, like Brigham College's Mormon television station.
Yeah.
And they were producing shows right here in Canada, like family shows like the Parker Andersons. And then you also get like the people who will just kind of tack on their own political agendas onto this market. You know, you mentioned Sound of Freedom, right? Is Sound of Freedom religious, or is it a movie that, you know, about child trafficking that has a certain political agenda that just has a line about
stars
God
Jim
saving
Caviezel,
God's children?
Played
that
Jesus
stars
Christ
Jesus. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
But
really, like, I mean, the backstory there is it's kind of pushing this QAnon agenda and using church groups to market that story. Unsuspecting, lots of unsuspecting churchgoers were marketing that movie and its kind of political agenda through their church groups and stuff. And that's how it became this big hit.
But here's where it gets me, Brent, is like I'm confused about two lines that appear to be going in opposite directions. There's the one line of fewer and fewer people call themselves religious, right? Like we've seen this sort of trend happening over the last like two decades or so is that fewer and fewer people are willing to sort of like loudly and openly say, yeah, I am a religious person. And then the other line, which is a trend line that's going up, which is people who are turning to these movies who are saying, you know what, like I'm getting a lot of values or like how I want to live my life or what I want my life to look like out of these movies. And this is confusing to me. What do you make of of these, you know, because one line is like literally going all the way up and then the other one is going all the way down. And I'm having trouble squaring the two of them.
Well, I got a couple hot takes for you. One is that maybe the decline narrative is a bit overstated. You know, people say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. You know, someone who's a professional like me says, yeah, that's basically the same thing. Or the kind of religiosity that surrounds any number of things we do, from legal practice to watching the Super Bowl or basketball games or baseball games or whatever.
It's a highly ritualized thing.
There's highly ritualized aspects. Humans seem to need that, want that, you know, kind of default to it in some ways.
Sure.
The other side of it is that maybe the people who are left, maybe that is accurate, but the people who are left have a pretty good tax base, you know, so they're just consuming a lot of this content, right? Maybe the people who are left have a little extra.
They got
know,
money.
Spending.
They can make the stuff.
Yeah, they got disposable money and stuff. Yeah. I think the third thing I'd say is more sinister, and that is, you know, maybe culturally, economically, money is our most important value in a lot of ways, right? And so especially in terms of content production and consumption, money is a major thing. I would call it the most important deity on planet Earth, you know. And so I think even with people who, as Rad is saying, presumably want to have good motivations, you know, you start looking close, maybe they don't.
Can I add a fourth scenario to this?
Ready.
Oh, please.
What if it was the you were seeing it as all of a sudden faith-based content is becoming more successful of late when we're seeing like people claiming religion going down, but maybe it's because there's now this divergence where in the past Hollywood itself was making these Christian movies, right? Like Ben-Hur, The Ten Commandments, all it was part of the Hollywood machine. And now that there's the separation where for Hollywood,
it's a different ecosystem.
Exactly. So now it's like, it looks faith-based films look successful because all of a sudden they've been separated from the mainstream.
Right.
And there's also a huge online component to this that I can't not talk about. There are all these podcasts that have popped up where people get together and they talk about the Bible. And I want you guys to take a listen to this.
Listen to me so carefully. If you've already said yes to something and then leading up to it, you do not want to go. You're getting sick. You're just tired. You don't want to go. All these, what if I just skipped? That is because God has something so big for you there and the devil wants to steal it.
Whoa.
Okay, so that is from a podcast called Girls Gone Bible, which has a giant, like I cannot tell you how giant their online footprint is. They have a lot of followers. What do you think it is about the Bible that squares with what people are looking for when they go online? Because I'm seeing like this massive sort of TikTok following, Instagram following for podcasts like Girls Gone Bible.
I think, to put it in the most simple terms, the world is on fire. And when we are surrounded by the worst case scenario on every side, which is pretty much what's going on right now, you need to believe in something or you're going to lose all hope. Now, you don't have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in the Bible. But I think it's almost in the same realm as when you see like wellness groups pop up and like when people turn to like crystals and like, and I'm not equating the Bible to crystals. I'm not equating any of that. But I think people are searching for something bigger than what we're seeing, because if this is all there is, how profoundly upsetting is that? Like, that's incredibly sad. So I think this is probably going to offend a lot of people. Just like how we all made bread at the beginning of the pandemic. And we're like, look at our thing that we're doing. Like, look at all of us making our bread together. Like, we're in this together.
It's a thing that anchors you, though. That's the thing you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. And like, so people find solace in that. And if they do, that's cool. I think it's wonderful that there are these platforms that make all of these conversations readily available if people are looking for something like that. I just think the danger is when those conversations lead to critiquing or putting, you know, condemning other people who don't believe in the same things.
Brent, what do you make of this in terms of the idea that, you know, social media sort of allowed different access to allow Christianity and the Bible in general to just come a little bit closer to the center of pop culture?
Yeah, we've seen it in like, you know, Gen Z TikToks on, you know, translating the Bible or whatever. Sure. And I think that's good. On the one hand, translation is kind of an inescapable thing when we're dealing with an ancient text. And there's precious few that could even rank with it in terms of its cultural impact. So that shows its liveliness. But I think the important point to keep in mind, and this is what Anne was already gesturing toward, is that not every translation is equally good. And so the question is, you know, for me, when I assess something like these TikToks or Girls Gone Bible, is it a good interpretation? You know what I mean? I mean, people like me study years to try to get that right, or at least to try to get it less wrong.
So, right.
Although I would like to add that, like, if, like she was saying in the clip, like, if you are having those feelings, you don't want to go to a place, I think it might also just be that you don't want to go, like, the party might suck.
you might just be anxious.
You might just have social anxiety and it just might, or you might just be tired and you might be a buzzkill at the party. So you're doing God's will by staying home and not infecting everyone with your negativity. Like, I think there's so many different ways.
You might be suggesting what Brent is suggesting, which is maybe that's not the interpretation that you want to take.
We're all having our own Bible.
I played you guys that clip because it went viral a couple of weeks ago, and I was really struck by the strength of the reaction to it. Like, a lot of people sort of debating whether they're onto something or, you know, like, on the one hand, there were the interpretations of, like, this is what I'm going to say to all my friends when they don't want to go to the club. It's like, there's something so good for you there. Why don't you want to go? And on the other hand, people were being like, no, this is actually, like, there's something serious about this, about the idea that you have to actually push past discomfort, and they're opening a window into this conversation. And Brent, maybe, like, this is – maybe that's what this is about, is the idea that we are regaining, if you will, a public muscle for talking about religion that I think we used to have. We used to have a bit of a good foundation for publicly talking about faith. My reading of it is that muscle has atrophied a little bit in pop culture and it maybe is regaining a bit of strength. Would you say that's an accurate reading, or am I completely off base here?
I mean, maybe so. At least I want to be optimistic about the fact that maybe this is a tool or a means or a workout regimen by which we could strengthen the muscle again.
Sure.
You know, my more dubious or skeptical moment, I should say, is that maybe some other drivers are at work here beyond just like the altruism of, you know, positive religious experience or positive religious practice.
Rad, this, maybe I'll give last word to you. We've put up a couple of ideas, which is the idea that, hey, if we are seeing a little bit more conversation about faith and conversation about Christianity in public and in pop culture, there are maybe a couple of reasons and motivations. One is, well, it's kind of a bleak moment and people need something. And it makes a lot of sense that this content would sort of reassure and help sort of, you know, guide people through these moments. And then on the other hand, there's money and power also involved in the making of this. So what do you think about all these things together? How do you see the interest in stories that mine the Bible for entertainment, for pop culture? Where do you see that interest moving from here?
Look, I mean, I still see this as a very constant presence that's circular. The beginning of these faith-based films, for me, I remember I actually reviewed what I guess would be the first one. It was Bella, which was a 2006 film made by the producer of Passion of the Christ, and he premiered that at TIFF. And it was just a pro-life drama. It was about a woman dealing with her pregnancy. That was the first one. And but again, like, we've always had stories like that. It was just told from a particular shingle. So we will still have people who will interpret the Bible in that way going forward. But we will also have movies like Immaculate, which is now
which is
open
in theaters.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's a movie that is kind of picking up from Rosemary's Baby, where it's a nunsploitation horror movie that you will deem sacrilegious. And that they interpret that story as a my body, my choice narrative. Yeah. Religious texts will always be a pillar. The Bible will be a pillar in the same way that Greek tragedies are a pillar, in the same way that Shakespeare is a pillar. And we will always have stories that will kind of remodel them and interpret them in competing
ways. It pulls
and
pushes against them. Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. So, it's rich material. It can't go away.
Happy Easter, everybody. Thank you for being on the show. Rad, Brent, and you guys are a delight. Thank you so much.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Everybody.
Rad Tamanpalay is a freelance film critic whose work shows up in the Globe and Mail and CTV and right here on Commotion. Reverend Brent Strawn is an ordained minister, and he's a professor at the Divinity School at Duke University in North Carolina. And Auntie Donahue is a writer based in Cambridge, Ontario. And that is it for the podcast today. Remember, you can listen to the show anytime you like, wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Alamin Abdul Mahmoud. I'll see you tomorrow.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.